CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, we have some big casting news to report. Rena Sofer, who has played Bold and Beautiful's Quinn Fuller for the past 9 years, has opted to leave the show and will last air on August 29th. Now, we have an exclusive interview with Rena in the new issue, courtesy of Carolyn Hinsey, where Rena says that the time is right for her to go and see what else is out there. So she's going to now focus on auditioning for film and primetime roles. She'll deal with her ceramics line, which is RenaSoferCeramics.com, for anyone who wants to check it out, and also getting her youngest daughter, Avalon, ready for college. You know, I think it's such a big loss for B&B. Quinn was a real unique character for that show, and the quarter romance with Quinn and Carter was really picking up a lot of steam. So the timing is unfortunate on that end, but she had so much praise for Lauren St. Victor, who plays Carter, as well as for the show itself. And she really had a solid, almost decade-long run. Now, the interesting part to me was that she did not say no to reprising GH's Lois if the opportunity arose.
I don't want to get my hopes up, but I think a return by Lois, even if it was a short-term one, would be utterly fantastic. I would love to see her in scenes with Lisa LoCicero, who's Olivia knew Lois when they were growing up in Brooklyn. And of course, I would love to see her in scenes again with Wally Kurth, her real-life ex, because Ned and Lois were just such a special couple. But I agree with you that Rena, who is, you know, just such a terrific actress and really brought something dynamic to B&B, will be so missed on that canvas. Now, there's another big exit coming down the pike. Kelly Teabod, who has played Brit on GH on and off since 2012 and won an Emmy for her work earlier this year, will be reprising her role as Eva on the primetime drama Station 19. And while it is GH's policy not to comment on contracts, show sources confirmed to Digest that she will be wrapping her current run in Port Charles by the end of the year. I'm a big fan of Kelly's and of Brit's, so I'm happy for her, but sad for us viewers.
Oh, me too. I mean, I feel the show has finally put Brit into really good story and right on the front burner. So the timing is just too bad. But I'm very happy for her, for sure. Now, also in the new issue, I had the opportunity to talk to Daze's executive producer, Ken Corday, about the big move to Peacock in September. Now, he answers a lot of the burning questions fans have about what this means for their viewing experience. And overall, I would say that his tone was very positive and excited. You know, he assures everyone that it will still be the same days everyone knows and loves, but, you know, even better in some small ways come spring. Just for anyone who isn't aware, Days films very early. They are already into February episodes. So we might see longer program length and maybe like the show will be a little more titillating. But he is overall so jazzed about being on the pioneering end of streaming soaps.
I thought it was very interesting during our last podcast when Robert Scott Wilson, who plays Alex on Days and was part of the 2013 internet version of All My Children, when that show and One Life to Live were rebooted, he brought up the same thing that we've talked about, which is that viewers are so much more accustomed in 2022 to consuming programming via streaming than they were a decade ago. You know, in 1952, Guiding Light made the transition from radio to television, and it aired both on radio and on TV for 4 years before the radio production was officially phased out. I've never spoken to anyone who listened on radio and had to make that leap to TV, but I wonder if it was similarly met among fans with a lot of anxiety and even fear about what it meant for the future of the show. Well, as we all know, Guiding Light lasted on TV from 1952 to 2009, making it one of the longest running programs on television ever. And I don't think it's out of the question that Days will similarly thrive on Peacock. It's interesting to think about what it means that the show could become more titillating, I might add. I don't know if you remember this, but on the internet editions of All My Children and One Life, the love scenes were racier and there was even some swearing. I think it's going to be fascinating to, you know, track the changes. And I felt reassured by Ken's interview, which was a good reminder that change isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, I completely agree. And I also feel like you made such a good point about the transition from radio to television, because in the time you're talking about, not every American home even had a television. So I feel like it is comparable to people who don't stream. Like, maybe this will make them stream. Maybe this will make them want to stream. You know, streaming's good, people. Like, you know, my 90-year-old aunt can do it. Everyone can do it. But really, Ken's voice had a lot of enthusiasm and energy, and it was not just some PR spin. He really sounded genuinely thrilled. And anyone in the industry who I've spoken to, you know, very matter-of-factly notes that this is the future for all of television, most likely, so we have to get used to it. And again, that doesn't have to be a negative thing. Now, our guest today is a relative soap newcomer who has already made quite a splash. It's Naomi Matsuda, who plays Bold and Beautiful's Lee. So let's check in with her and see how her daytime experience has been so far. Hi, Naomi.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Better and better.
Well, Mara and I were just saying how excited we are to talk to you and get to know more about you, because we don't know a lot, but I feel like we will at the end of the hour. So we are going to start that you were born in Nagasaki, Japan, and lived there for the first 6 years of your life. So do you have memories of your early life there?
A little, not too much, but a little. I do. I have memories of my home, of my family there. I have memories of my cousins that I would play with. It's just random visions that I see, that I remember, yeah.
So your family moved to San Diego when you were quite young. How would you describe what it was like for you to make such a major move at such a formative age?
Well, yeah, I was what, five? I was 5 years old. And then, yes, and right when I came to the States, I turned six. So yes, it was 1975 when we first moved out here. My mother, my brother, and I, and my aunt had already been living in San Diego. So that was the invitation that we got when my mother decided to bring us over. So we went to San Diego to stay with her for a while. And then we got our own place, where my mother did. And that was the beginning of Naomi's life in America.
Well, you did become an All My Children fan. So how were you introduced to the show? And was that the only soap you watched, or was it one of many?
It was one of many. So at my aunt's house in the daytime, I would be the only one sitting on the couch watching soap operas. Didn't understand what I was hearing, but just the actions and everything. I remember sitting there like this, just on the couch, just watching, and my aunt would walk by, my mom, and they would just ask, do you know what you're listening to? Are you understanding this? And I said, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They're like, okay. So at that point, and 6 years old, I started performing Japanese dance, and then was still watching, and my cousins and I, we would always make up dances and skits, and we would make everyone sit on the sofa and just watch us perform. So that's what we were doing when we all lived together, when we were, you know, five, six, seven, around there, that age. Mm-hmm. Yes. But yeah, All My Children, I was watching Young and the Restless. I was watching them all, literally going back and forth, and just sort of, no, I have to watch this now. I knew what time to watch them. I knew. That's one thing I remember, saying, I have to watch this. And so my mom, whenever I wanted to watch TV, she would always say yes, so I can learn English. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we didn't speak English when we first came here. So when I started kindergarten, I was late, and I learned my English there. And then when at home, we spoke English so my mom can learn English. And she spoke to us in Japanese. But then I forgot my Japanese because I never really spoke Japanese because I needed to speak English. So that's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've heard from a lot of actors and some viewers, certainly, that's how they learned English, which is it makes a lot of sense, but I think it's also a really neat connection to have now that you're on a soap opera.
Yeah. Yes.
So generally speaking, what was it like to grow up in the San Diego area?
Well, I was very privileged. I feel it was, I was able to go to school, private schools, starting from fourth grade and up. And that was a neat experience, just being able to, belong to a school that I could make friends, and still to this day, from my fourth grade class, a schoolmate had followed me on Instagram, and she messaged me and said, "Do you remember me from fourth grade, Claremont Christian?" And I said, "Oh, I do." And so that was really cool. So there's a lot of reunions happening lately. San Diego was just so nice. I had a best friend, and, you know, always staying at her place because my mom was always working, and just learning how to, you know, cook Italian foods and just different kinds of just different cultures. Because when we came here, of course, Japanese, and everything was Japanese. And I started to go to school in San Diego. I had a best friend in kindergarten. Her name was Nora Roman. And I would walk to her house every day. And over there, we ate tortillas and beans like every day. And I thought that was the best thing on the world besides ramen, because we were living off of ramen back then. But I just thought that was so cool. And I got to go to church with them and got to wear the white dress for
communion.
So, thank you. Yes. So that was a really
Jewish girl.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I went to Yom Kippur. Yes, I did. For the whole, and I thought the ceremony was incredible. Like, I just said, the scrolls, oh my God, they're so gorgeous. And like the ceremony was so beautiful. But I said, okay, we're on fourth hour. Can I go, or is it okay? I want to be respectful, but just, you can go. It's fine. I said, well, so lovely. Thank you so much for the experience. But I was like, wow, this is a long ceremony.
Yep. You've never lived till you've done Yom Kippur in a synagogue.
Yeah, exactly.
I can say I have done that and enjoyed it. But after 4 hours, I'm like, okay, gotta go.
We're good.
Thanks. Yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, you and your cousins did skits, and that you were that you studied traditional Japanese dance. So do you feel like this is where you really began to tap into the love of performing?
Yes, you know, absolutely. But I have pictures from when I was 2 and 3 on stage singing at weddings, and my mom would just put me up there. She would hand me a microphone, and she would just say, "Go ahead and just sing." And I don't remember doing that. I was so young, but I guess I was already performing before. And then dance was just, it just came natural to me. And so I started dancing. And so my cousins and I, we would always do skits of dancing, you know, just like the disco dance. I guess it was the 70s. So we just watching, what is that, Soul Train? And we would just perform always. And we just make everyone just watch all the boys, you know, my brothers and cousins, and they would just sit there just bored and just, but my mom, they would make them sit and watch us. So it was really, really fun. Yeah. So I definitely started performing. My mother was also a performer. She's a wonderful singer, and she was a performer of the family also. So I think I took after her. Mm-hmm. and my grandmother who performed Japanese dance in Japan until she was in her late 80s.
Oh, yeah,
you know, the white makeup and the wig and the kimono, just so elegant. She was just so incredible just watching her. And I thought how wonderful it was that I was able to see her actually perform when I was a teenager. So
that's amazing. That Absolutely.
Incredible. Yeah.
Now at 13, you added jazz and ballet to your repertoire as a dancer. So was dance something you considered pursuing as a career?
Yeah, that was the whole reason why I moved to LA in the first place. Mm. Was because I wanted to be a dancer. Well, I was a dancer, but I wanted to do music videos and tour. And that was my goal at the time. I tried to move up here when I was 17, I remember, and I failed. And I went back to San Diego and I said, no, I don't think I made it this time. I wasn't strong enough, secure enough. I was so young and just, So 24, I moved up here with $10 to my name and a car full of my just clothes and whatnot. Got rid of my apartment in San Diego, sold everything, and just moved up here. And that was the beginning. 1994 and 1997, I got booked my first national commercial, and it was incredible. I booked a video, music video. And I thought, oh, great. I booked a music video. I did it. It was awesome. And back then when it was golden time, and we don't have that anymore, but we danced and it was great. And then I was working at the House of Blues at the time. And my friends that were working, they were actors. And they said, Naomi, you need to act. And I said, no, I'm a dancer. That's how I do. That's what I do. And they said, no, you need to act. And I said, okay. So I tried it. So I went in for my first audition as an actor. And we all looked, I remember going, walking to the room, and all these girls, we all looked identical. We all looked the same. We all had long black hair. long black dress and red lipstick. And I said, this is not going to work for me. This is not going to work for me. I need to stand out. How am I going to say? Because this is no. I chopped all my hair off and I started, and I booked and booked and booked and booked and booked and booked commercially. And then next thing you know, theatrical stuff came through. They started putting wigs on me. So I started growing my hair out long. So then my hair stayed long since then. But that was the first beginning of my career as a performer in Los Angeles.
So tell me more about how you actually go about even getting yourself in a position to be in a room to possibly book a job if this wasn't your background and, you know, your goal. How did you figure out what your entree point was?
I think a lot of life experience, growing pains assisted in that, in my self-confidence and self-worth. Whereas before, as a dancer, I used my body and movements to express my emotions and what I was trying to release or with movements and dance. And now I am able to use my voice now to relate, to convey messages, anything so the audience can feel something. And that is the whole reason, that's the whole point of me doing this, is so I can have someone feel something and have them move through them that will assist them in any way possible. I'm here to use my voice that I have, this voice that is helpful, I think, in my work, because it's memorable. There's strength behind it now that I'm in my 50s. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, that strength wasn't there. That confidence wasn't there. It was all, I had to learn it all, as I do every day still. It's not something that I just learn and you just remember it all the time. No, it's something that I work on every day to remember who I am and what I move through and why I came here and why I'm here as a performer, as a voice, as a public figure. So I can use this platform to really just use my voice to assist others in uplifting them for their journey at this time.
Now, was your family supportive of your move or your decision to enter the arts?
Yes, absolutely. They really just had no choice. I was the first one to leave from the whole family. I was the first one I was a black sheep, I guess you would say. That's what they say here, a black sheep. Yes, they're proud, but they're also thinking like, oh yeah, that's Naomi. She's always doing something great. So, you know, so that I learned this year. So it's okay if I don't get the validation from them all the time. It's the validation I get is the fact that I am so welcomed on the show. I am so welcomed by people fans that are watching, and just the response I get. That's success for me. Just that they feel good and they feel something when they see me on stage or on film or TV or whatever.
Yeah. So wait, you mentioned that you were working at the House of Blues. What other day jobs did you have while you were finding your footing in this industry?
So House of Blues was a great place. Yeah. I joined right when they first opened and it was incredible. I've always been in the service industry, but before that I worked in the hair salon. I went to cosmetology school. I worked for a modeling agency. I mean, I did everything I was supposed to do. So I can remember what I'm supposed to do. So now I'm remembering that. I remember that I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to perform. I'm supposed to do that.
Well, what was the first professional acting job you booked?
A Toyota campaign. Mm-hmm. National. That was my very first. Mm-hmm. It was a Toyota, and I had really short hair, like a buzz cut. Like I just chopped it all. And yeah, that was my very first one. And I remember when I went on to set my very first commercial, my booking, I was so nervous. I don't know. I just didn't know the ropes. I was just kind of like, okay. So there's like, they said, Naomi, you can go over there and sit in your chair. And I said, oh, great. And I saw another girl there wearing the same thing I'm wearing, but she, you know, and I said, oh, I go, maybe she was there too in case I mess up and they're going to use her instead. And so that's what I thought. So I'm sitting there and said, hi. And we're just kind of just having small talk. I'm so nervous. I didn't know what was going on. And then I hear, okay, second team, please come up. And the guy's saying that's looking over directly at us. So I get up and she gets up and I go, oh, is it my turn? He goes, no, you're first team. And I said, what's that mean? I don't know what that means. So in other words, he went like this. So I said, okay, I'm sitting down. And then she goes up and I said, am I already fired? Like, what does that mean? I was so, and like, okay, Naomi, you're up. And then she goes, okay, have fun. The girl that, and I said, have fun. I go, so did we both book the commercial?
commercial.
I was so good. And then I learned later on that, yeah, she was just there to be my stand-in. And I had no idea what that was. And that was my very first experience.
Oh my goodness.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, diversity in casting has become a much bigger priority in the industry at large in recent years. Do you feel like a lack of role for Asian actors or a lack of vision in casting directors to consider Asian actors for roles that maybe didn't specify the cultural background of a character was an obstacle that you encountered as you were building your way and building your resume, building your credits?
Well, what I noticed in the past when I was younger and when I first started acting was a lot of roles that I did, you know, I booked a hooker, of course, but I just feel like the stereotype of cultures that the society has put upon us, that had a big play with in casting and in films and just in how everyone is thinking, just socially, how we were trained and conditioned to think, moving with the times of this thing called life on earth with everything that's happening with cultures and diversities and all that division and all that, which I did experience that, yes, because it was like, oh, you're Asian, oh, so young Asian pretty girl, masseuse or hooker, like those were like the typical roles that were offered for Asian descent of Asian women, or that, or like the tiger mom or the martial artist. You know, you're just because we're socially conditioned to see cultures and nationalities that way. So I did experience a little of that, but I didn't use it as an excuse or anything like that. It's just, you know, now looking back in hindsight, it was what it was. And I believe all of us, we all just went with the flow of how the world was seeing, how we were all seeing each other in our nationalities.
So one of the jobs that jumped out to us on your resume was an episode of The Comeback starring Lisa Kudrow. So what was your experience like on that show?
That was so much fun. Yeah, she's so great. She was just so awesome. And the character I played her husband's teammate, or I worked with her husband, and you know, the just because of how I looked, and we were dancing, and I was just kind of getting all in there with him, and you know, the look on her face, and during rehearsal, she was just like, we had so much fun rehearsing and playing that, and just playing off of each other. I mean, I have little lines, but still, and it was really fun to work with her. Like, it was just fun. I mean, that's the whole point of it. We're having fun doing this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so in 2015, you made your daytime debut on Days of Our Lives, where you briefly played the role of Tori Narita. So was that the first time you'd ever gone out for a soap?
That was the first time I was hired to be on a soap, but that was only for one day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the next day they replaced me. So that was that. So I didn't really have an experience
Sure. In
our lives, but I had just that one day of shooting one little scene, and then that was that. So, and then who replaced me is a friend of mine who I know, and I understand the difference of characters, why I was not, after they hired me, then they said, no, it's not her. It's going to be someone else. And I understand that now. At the time I was really confused, and I just said, I got fired. Why? Or did I get fired? Oh, I did. Why? I don't know what happened. So anyway, a year later, I found out the real reason, or if it was, it doesn't matter anymore, but just the fact that it was fine. And the girl that, the woman that replaced me is a friend of mine, and I was so happy for her. She didn't receive the credit for years. I received the credit for years, and that's why, looking me up, it'll say that I was on Days of Our Lives, but it was only for one day.
Mm-hmm. But you were still on it.
But I was still on it.
We have photos, so you were on
so it happened.
Well, what was that like for you just in general when you were auditioning for any soaps? What other soaps did you audition for? And just the experience that you had growing up watching soaps, was it more exciting to go out for that kind of audition?
It was, but it was also more nerve-wracking because, especially in my 20s, I went out a lot for General Hospital, and Mark, he's just so great. But, you know, in my 20s, I'm just... I'm still anxious. I'm still just trying to find out who I am. And, you know, I got this role and I'm supposed to play this role and be this person. And, you know, I wasn't still understanding exactly. I'm going to go in there and perform. Like, you know, I know soap operas. I watched them my whole life. I know what they want. So I'm just giving performance. And clearly that wasn't what they wanted, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go in there and just... And so that was my experience with soaps. But yeah, I get excited. I used to get so excited auditioning for soaps because I was just, I'm like, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then Bold and Beautiful happened, and I'm thinking, and I'm still literally pinching myself. Like, is this really happening? It's happening. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, we got to dive into your time on The Bold and the Beautiful. So we fast forward to 2021. You made your Bold and the Beautiful debut as Lee Finnegan. So tell us about the casting process that you went through to land the role.
Okay. Well, I didn't audition for it. It was offered to me. And just last month, I asked, you know, Chrissy Dooley and Rachel Rose, the executive assistant, I said, can I ask how I booked this role? Because I did self-tapes for Bold and Beautiful a few years ago, right when self-tapes started happening for Bold and Beautiful. Great. Self-tapes. And I thought, oh, maybe they just saw my tapes and they booked me from that. And they said, no. She said, we looked at reels and we found your reel and you got yourself this job, Naomi, from your reel. And I said, really? Yeah. Can I go say thank you to Christy? Just falling my eyes off.
Why did that mean so much to you?
Because as a performer, I feel like it's nice to have have someone say, you know, Naomi, that was a good job. Mm-hmm. You're doing good. You know, it's nice to hear that, because, you know, I worked so hard at it and I wonder because I don't know everything. Right. And but I just do the best I can. And hopefully I get it right. And I just do it and trust and see what happens. And I think the response is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm so appreciative of what all that's happening right now, mm-hmm. which is them receiving me.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly hit the ground running. Lee came onto the canvas for the wedding of her son, Finn, to Steffi. So tell us about your entry into the show and what you remember about your first day.
Oh my gosh. The first day I was a mess. I was like, oh, please let me breathe. And Ted King, who plays my husband, he's a veteran. So he was like, Naomi, just follow my lead. You're going to be fine. It's going to be crazy the first day because you're going to be on set with everybody on the show. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, it's going to go really fast. I go, what do you mean really fast? I go, like, we're all going to rehearse, right? Like a lot of times. He goes, no, we don't do that here. Maybe. I go, what do you mean? I have a huge monologue. Like, what do you mean? And so, and he's like, Naomi, it's okay. It's all right. Just follow my lead and you're fine. Just know it's going to be like, literally, like, they're all going to come up and they're going to introduce yourself, you know, themselves to you. And the director's going to tell you exactly what to do, where your mark is, where your camera is, and all this. And I'm like, okay. All right. Okay. Breathe. And I just literally just was like hanging on to him, like staying next to him, like looking at him, like, okay, the director, what do I do? Like, it was just it was nerve wracking, but so much fun at the same time. And I just said, okay, let me just breathe. And John McCook came up to me and he was like, Naomi, there's a reason why you're here. And he gave me such a wonderful pep talk. They all came up to me. We're so happy you're here. And you're so beautiful. And thank you. So we hope you stay. And there was so much love and welcome that I got, that it really helped me just smile within and knowing that I could do this with so much support on set. Everyone around me was just so supportive that I could cry. It was so magical.
If I was in your shoes, knowing that The Bold and the Beautiful tapes in the same studio as Young and the Restless, I would have been trolling the halls trying to get a glimpse of a Victor Newman or a Jack Abbott.
Oh my God.
Any of that?
I had a starstruck meltdown moment when I saw Victor Newman because I'm running. I'm trying to get home to the babysitter. I'm running. We wrapped. I'm like, oh. And then there he is in the hallway. And here I am running. Victor Newman! He's like, okay. And I'm like, meltdown. Oh my God, Victor Newman. So that was me. He's like, okay, wow. Complete fool out of myself. I'm like, it's Victor Newman. I've seen, been watching him since I was, you know, in elementary school. And there he is. And he's right here. He's right there.
Amazing.
Well, it sounds like Ted King was very helpful when you first started. Tell
God
us about
him. Mm-hmm. Thank God.
We drew too. And tell us about your relationship with Tanner Novlin, who plays your son.
Oh, he's so special. He's so special. He's so down to earth. He's so just, he's, you know, he's amazing. He's great. I mean, what else can I say? It's like, he's just always right there. It just, when we rehearse, he's always, you know, just present with me. And he jokes around a little bit, you know, loosens things up on the set a little bit at times, you know, and yeah, I really respect him. He's so nice. Mm-hmm. He's just nice. It's just nice energy.
He's a Canadian.
I was going to say the Canadians is that Canadian nice energy is so, same with Jack and Wood. They're just so nice and just real. And there's no pretentious nothing about them or no ego, nothing. They're just both just like, hi, let's do the scene. Let's do it. It's like, yeah, so great. So open and supportive. There, it's just everyone there is just, I feel I've just won the lottery. I feel like just so nice.
So was that your experience of Jackie from day one?
Oh my gosh. Yes. She's not only is she dubbed like gorgeous out here, but like her personality, makes her even, doesn't even compare to what she looks like on the physical. She's pure heart. She's so sweet.
It's a great cast.
Wow. Yeah. Everyone's really so lovable. So great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as with any good soap wedding, there were some shockers at Finn and Steffi's. It was revealed that Finn's birth mother is the infamous Sheila Carter, played by Kimberlyn Brown. You know, I don't think we could have predicted at the time just how much drama was in store for Lee and Sheila. But what were your first impressions of Kimberlyn?
She was so, oh my gosh, she's so great. She goes, Naomi, she goes, there's going to be a cat fight watching the future. And I said, what? What are you talking about? I'm just meeting her. I'm like, I know your face because of Y&R. And I go, oh, now I'm shooting with someone that I recognize. Oh my gosh. So I go home. I'm like, I just shot with someone. So my friends were laughing. And Kimberlyn is so incredible. She is so generous. She's like this. She's professional. Naomi, what do you need? Well, always, what do you need? Naomi, step to the right and the camera will get you. Like, she's that actor. She's so generous. She's so helpful. She's old school, all about the scene. Let's just do this, all about the scene. And that's how I am. It's all about the scene. Let's do the scene for the show. Let's mm-hmm. do it. Let's have fun. Let's do the best, you know, have the most, you know, everything. And I have the most fun with Kimberlyn.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just mentioned that you incorrectly thought there might be lots of time for some luxurious rehearsal. That wasn't the case. Is there anything else that you can think of as you were acclimating to the show that was like different from what you expected or that there was a learning curve for to working in this genre?
Lines. the lines, memorizing all the lines and just all of that. I definitely feel, because I'm so self-taping for, you know, for other auditions, I definitely noticed my brain memory part of memorizing lines had really kicked up a notch. That's one thing I did notice about that. And just, I feel like more grounded. I'm learning so much. I feel like this is the best. I mean, like, again, it's the lottery. I'm learning so much of this craft. Like, and I keep hearing, you know, once you're do a soap, you can do anything. My God, your discipline, you know, and I'm always, I learned very early to be on set early, to not have them call for you or anything like that. And I really take that to heart. Like, I learned so much about, because it's not about me. It's about the show and there's other people on the show. It's other people working. We're all one team and we all work together. So I always make sure that I'm there waiting, that I don't waste any time. for the show. So I'm learning so much just by watching and hearing, you know, just observing everything daily. So I'm so thankful. It's the best time right now that I'm having the best time right now. I'm learning so much and just being appreciative and being appreciated too. Yeah. So it feels good.
Well, speaking of being appreciated, I feel like the audience really took a shine to you from the get-go. And I don't know how much you go on Twitter and such, but presuming you did get a bit of a sense of how this fan response was to both you and Lee, what did that warm reception mean to you?
Everything. I mean, it's everything for me. So, because then it tells me that I'm doing something right, that it tells me that there's something here that they like enough to tweet about it or to even take the seconds to text something or anything, just any kind of response. And everyone that says something, even if it is against me, I'm so appreciative of it because they still took the time.
Who's saying things against you, Naomi? I'm going to come for them in their DM.
Well, I think it's for the character. It's the character, you know.
All right. So Lee's marriage to Jack imploded with the reveal that he had lied to her for many years, and he was actually Finn's biological father via a long ago affair with Sheila. So I'm curious to know, when you got those scripts and saw that the show was giving you like such a big opportunity to really strut your dramatic chops, were you excited? Were you nervous? You know, talk us through everything you were feeling.
Jumping up and down, dancing, screaming. You know, my friend downstairs, we were just dancing up and down. And then I was like, yay, I get to finally like do big scenes and I get to do like, you know, drama scenes. Like, I remember saying that and we would just rehearse her and I up here, you know, before I would go. She's like, okay, let's, you know, we'll just go over and over and again. And so I have my lines down. So when I go to set, you know, then I can just play and just really take it in and, just really focus on my character's background and just where she came from, so I can just go ahead and ease into it and just let the words flow out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a dance party up here, that's for sure.
Well, what do you remember about actually filming them?
What do I remember?
Mm-hmm.
Like I almost threw up in my mouth. like I was so nervous. Like I remember, even the stage manager Lisa was like, Naomi, are you okay? There was so much direction, and then it was a really emotional scene that I know we had to do. It was, my Ted King telling me about the betrayal. It was that scene, and it was really emotional. I loved it so much because I love these scenes like that, because I just the emotional life is so deep, and I can grab whatever I had and just, oh. But then at the same time, okay, I have to remember that. And she wanted me to pick my purse on that line. And then she wanted me to look over there on the other line. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then I have to look at this camera. And that's my other camera. I was literally a mess. And I remember thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I just closed my eyes and I said, okay, breathe, Naomi. Just someone help me. Breathe. Pray. Thank you. I'm ready. Let's go. And then just take a big breath and then I just do it. And I don't know what happens after that. I black out after that. What happens.
Amazing. So those scenes ultimately became even more significant because you put them on your Emmy reel and you earned your first nomination in the guest performer category. So what did that recognition and honor mean to you?
Just bawling my eyes out, and just no words except thank you and crying and thank you. And that's it. Like I just, at first I was like, what is this email? Like, oh, great. Emmys. That's awesome. What? is that my, and then Brad Bell called, what? That was my reaction. I remember I was sitting on the floor with my dog and just literally just going like this. It didn't even hit me until I heard Brad Bell's voice, and then I'm just bawling after that. It's just tear fest after that. Just, you know. Thank you. Wait, really? What do you mean? Oh, okay. So yeah, it was just a big cry. I was a big crybaby.
Mm-hmm. Well, your co-star Ted ended up winning that award, but it seemed to me like you won pretty big yourself at the Daytime Emmys. Not only did you look spectacular, but you got to meet and take a picture with Susan Lucci, star of All My Children, the show you watched as a child. So tell us about meeting her.
So I went to the bathroom and I see her and I freeze and I'm like, oh my. And I tapped on the shoulder and I said, Susan. And she turns around, so hi. And I said, hi. I've been watching you since I first came to this country. And I was, I'm like, I don't even know if she understood anything I said, but she said that she must have, because she was like, oh, you know, she was so sweet. I said, can I get a picture with you? She's like, of course. And she goes, did you speak any English? And I said, no, I didn't speak any English, but I knew you. I knew you were fantastic. Or I wanted to be you, and I'm here now. And she was like, oh, sweetheart. And I was like, what sweetheart are you? Picture time, and I'm crying in my picture with her. And I said, I'm here with you. This is a big win for me alone. Just this moment right here. This, my dream come true since I was literally a baby, 6 years old. I've made it. I can die now. Thanks. I'm good.
Did you even know she was going to be there that night?
No. And then Tracy Brightman, she was in there too. And then she turned and I said, oh, and you're and she goes, Naomi. I go, you know my name? Like, I watched you in the blue room and I go, what's the blue room or the blue screen? Or she said blue something. I said, what's that? She goes, I watched your scenes and you're really good. What's happening right now? And then my sister's like, stop crying your makeup. Oh my God. And I was like, I can't. It was just the best night ever. It was the biggest win ever for me. It's like, just to be nominated is the biggest win, the biggest, like, I'm telling you, it's my lottery ticket. I just won. It's the best. It's that feeling. It's that. And I feel it every day. So I'm so happy.
That's very, very cool. Well, 2022 has proven to be a very big year for Lee, to say the least. And we're only a chunk into it thus far. But to recap, Finn, quote unquote, died at the hands of Sheila, only for the show to reveal that he was actually alive and that Lee had absconded with him and was keeping him alive. So talk us through what you thought when you found out about that twist.
I said, good for Lee. I said, yay. The way to be step up to that, just be that mama, you know, the protective mama, that, you know what? I would do that. Absolutely. I would do that. So I ran with it. I was like, yes, let's go, Lee. Let's do this. I was like, yeah, soap opera, let's do it.
Well, it seems Kimberlyn was onto something, because the storyline has included some pretty epic confrontation scenes between Lee and Sheila. And I have truly been impressed by how well matched you and Kimberlyn are. I mean, from the outside looking in, it does not seem like she's an easy person to go up against when she's in Sheila mode, and you do it expertly. So tell us what those scenes have been like to play.
Because she's such an incredible actress. She's so she's such a professional. She's such a veteran. She just knows what to do. And so I always I follow her lead. She's my teacher. She taught me so much how to create scenes that we did together. Boy, I took her lead so many times because, you know, she's so fantastic. And then that just helped me her being so grounded pushed me to be even more grounded, to stand my ground even more up to her, because I know she's the villain and Lee Finnegan's got to beat her somehow. I go, I remember thinking, that's what I got to do. That's my objective. That's it. I've got to beat her, period. I've got to be stronger, if not stronger than her. And, you know, I'm like this tiny thing, but those girls that came and helped us, they were so wonderful. And, you know, I do have martial arts in my background. So I do choreography very well with my dance background and my martial arts. So I know how to do fight scenes very well. And I enjoy them because it's a dance for me. Any kind of martial arts fight is still a dance because it's choreographed. So that was so much fun to do with her too. And she's, because when she gives it, she gives it. She's scary. She can be so scary. So boy, and I really, really get scared. which you know, I'm sure it just played well because I was really genuinely scared at times. There was no acting there. I was a real deal.
So when you have these kinds of scenes with Kimberlyn, do you get to talk them over, talk about what you're going to do, or do you like save it for the actual filming?
No. Kimberlyn, we talk about everything, and I appreciate that. And I love that because it gives me more space also to just really give myself permission, because we talked about it already, to give each other permission because they are big, you know, they're physical scenes. And just to stay true to our characters, to do my character, you know, it's complete, mm-hmm. just to do the best I can for Lee, just mm-hmm. to really let her show up and shine mm-hmm. and fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, another big Lee surprise was in store when she was in a fiery car crash and we thought she was toast. So two-part question here. First of all, when you heard about that, were you like, wait, what? Am I living? And yeah. Then talk us through how you looked when you finally came back.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. When they first told me that I was going to drop, you know, go off and into the water, I said, thank you so much. I had the best time here with you guys. I'll never forget my time here with Bold. And he said, no, Naomi, you're going to live. And I go, I'm going to swim out of the crash somehow. He goes, swim. And I said, I swim very well. I can swim. And I was like, okay, good. Yay. So that, I was excited about that. And then me looking homeless. That was so much fun. That was my favorite. When I looking like that, the makeup and the hair and just, you know, it also being in the way I looked, of course it helps you get into character always. And that was my favorite. Being homeless was my favorite. It really was. Because costuming, where I really get to be that character, it made it so much more fun for me.
Well, it's such a stark contrast too, because Lee is very glamorous and polished. And then we went in the other direction. So which takes longer in the makeup chair?
the homeless for sure. Yeah, the homeless for sure. That was a lot. Yeah, you know, I kept skipping more dirt. And they were just like, I'm just standing there. And just dirt just being poured on me. And I said, more. Yes, great.
Well, Lee was rescued by a most unlikely kindly stranger in Bill Spencer, and fans saw sparks right away between Lee and Bill. So tell us about working with Don Diamon.
It was wonderful. It's great. I mean, he's a veteran and he's been there a long time. And again, it was just so nice working with someone that just has been, that knows the ropes and pretty much is a professional. And we just banged out our scenes, and it was really nice. Mm-hmm. It's really nice, and I'm glad that there was chemistry there for the audience. I'm happy that it was chemistry.
Were you like surprised that the reaction from fans was so immediate? Because I don't even think it had aired in Los Angeles before I was seeing all sorts of tweets about it in New York.
I'm just so surprised, but I understand now the fans, because I was, you know, I was like them. I was a fan, you know, for sure, you know, watching all those years. But I appreciate the fans immediately just jumping on and rooting for Lee to be with Bill Spencer. It just felt so nice. And it was like a nice, warm, yummy feeling that I got. Mm-hmm. You know, when I don't go much on Twitter very much, but Instagram I do, and just looking at the messages, what they're saying, and the majority of them are yes for the Bill and Bill Spencer and Lee Finnegan to get together. There was a few comments that were not.
Disregard those. Those were typos. Well, Lee's decision to allow Steffi to believe that Finn was dead is likely to be a source of tension between Lee and her daughter-in-law moving forward. So do you think Lee has any regrets or would do things differently if given a do-over?
Probably not. No.
Hey, he's alive.
Yep. Bottom line, I mean, at that point, that's all she, her focus was 100% on her son, and that's it. And no one would ever be, would interfere with that. But because she's so determined, she's a neurosurgeon. Of course, she's going to save her son, and she's not going to care about his wife because she partly blames the lifestyle of his wife and their family, you know, at least pissed in a way still kind of, and just still afraid she could still, because he's, she could still lose him. Mm-hmm. He's still back, you know? Yeah. He's back to, I brought him back to life. She brought him back to life, but he's still in the limelight. He could still be in danger because he's still, he's married to the Foresters. So Lee will always be on guard, and she'll always be protective and always make sure that her son is her only son. So yeah, she's going to make sure, I feel like so far what she's done so far, she's not going to back down. If anything, she'll always be on guard. I feel.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. I feel like there have been so many new layers to Lee that have been introduced and expanded upon. And I don't know how long you thought you might be on the show when you first started, but what does it mean to you that the show's clearly been inspired to continue writing for you and for Lee?
I appreciate that they actually want to do that for me, with me. And so I'm just appreciative of that I'm bringing something that they want to work with. So that right there is just a huge thank you and appreciation, overflowing of appreciation that I have. And so that I am able to really bring deeper layers of Lee into the show, because I feel like she does have darker stuff coming up.
Ooh, good tea. We like that.
You know what? Like, we'll not only give you an ooh, we'll give you a dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Dun dun dun. Well, I just watched my episode with my conversation with Lee, with Steffi, you know, and yeah, I noticed my voice got lower. I noticed I kind of got scarier, I guess.
A little bit, yeah.
I said, oh, where did that come? Oh, I went, okay, scary. Isn't that scary? Yes, you are now. Okay. But like, I didn't mean to go dark. Like, but I think I went, it seemed dark when I watched it. But
appropriately dark.
Yeah.
It's talking about resurrecting, basically.
Can we use appropriately, really?
Yeah. Now, before we let you go, is there anything you would like to say to the bold and beautiful viewers who are so happy to have you on the show?
Just thank you. I can say is thank you. Mm-hmm. I have nothing else to say but thank you over and over again.
Well, that's wonderful. And we are so looking forward to seeing what's ahead for Lee. You've been a breath of fresh air on the show. And we hope to have a reason to speak to you again soon.
Me too. Thank you so much, ladies. I appreciate you guys so much today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Naomi Matsuda for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.